Paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary, located at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, Maryland. I'm Dana Lake, and I share this show with my co-host, Dr. Kevin Pissarro. And we're here every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. You can tune in next Sunday for Kevin's discussion on nutrition. The show is streamed through myvillagegreen.com. You can visit the site to hear previous radio shows, including this one. And do visit the Village Green site in the store and online. You get expert advice on supplements in both places. Listeners, I'd like to introduce you to Kathy Swift. She's a nutritionist who designs curriculum for Food is Medicine and a co-author of a book on digestion, very cleverly called The Inside Track. We're talking about digestion, and we might as well start off with why digestive health is so important.
It is so vitally important because many chronic health problems have their origins in the digestive tract. And this is because every time we eat, we are ingesting information. And this information has to be digested and absorbed in the body to keep all our cells, organs, and systems healthy. And so I often refer to our digestive tracts as our highway to health, or it can be our pathway to pathology and problems.
I like the way you say
that. So, you know, and interestingly, we have an epidemic of digestive disorders, whether it's reflux, irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, celiac, gluten intolerance. I mean, quite a few, but most interestingly is there are a number of disorders, including autoimmune conditions, neurological problems, and even, you know, depression and anxiety that are related to the integrity of our digestive tracts.
Well, Kathy, what you're telling us is that there's a good reason that the most popular sales of over-the-counter remedies are for digestive symptoms. Let's go on and talk about, is there something about our diet that is fueling the digestive problems?
You bet there is. Our diets are loaded with many of the wrong types of foods, processed foods that are high in sugar, low in fiber, and really missing key nutrients important for health. We're also ingesting some foods that could be triggering adverse reactions in the body and disrupting our immune system, since most of our immune system is in the digestive tract.
Well, you've said that very well, and we repeat it, and it bears repeating. So what is the takeaway message? Let's have some tips for our listeners with regard to how they can improve their digestive health.
There's a process I refer to as weed and seed. It's almost like fixing and rebooting a computer, you know, that gets a virus. And the weeding means that we take a look at our diet, and we remove offensive foods. We often might start with the sugar load. It might be the wheat or dairy. So we weed out, you know, toxic ingredients and such. We also might consider removing if there's overgrowth of yeast or possibly an infection that could be problematic. And then the seeding is that we restore the integrity by feeding our inside tracts whole foods that are anti-inflammatory, and we may also use both pre- and probiotics to keep our friendly bacteria in the gut healthy. And we might even use repair nutrients such as glutamine or digestive enzymes. So all those things can be helpful.
Well, thank you. Good tips, and thank you for being with us, Kathy. Just a reminder, listeners, the conference Food as Medicine is coming up soon, June 7th to June 10th, sponsored by the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. Now, today, we're honored to have William Walsh, a PhD, and we're going to be talking about nutritional treatments in mental illness, getting to the source. We intend to cover some fascinating topics, which are in his new book, not out yet, but it's called Nutrient Power. We'll be talking about epigenetics and mental health, how what you do can change gene expression, and we'll try to highlight schizophrenia, depression, autism, behavioral disorders, ADHD, and Alzheimer's. So we're talking about conditions that affect mental health from birth to aging. Dr. Walsh is with the Walsh Research Institute, and he founded this in June of 2008 with the aim of continuing his research efforts into a range of mental disorders and the training of doctors around the world in advanced nutritional treatment of these disorders. Dr. Walsh was the founder and chief scientist of the Health Research Institute and Pfeiffer Treatment Center, where he worked for more than 20 years. And I believe I met you about 20 years ago. Dr. Walsh, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Dana. I remember you very well.
Let's start with what is the core of what you're trying to say, both through your wonderful Walsh Research Institute and your book that's coming out? Let's talk about that.
Well, there's a couple of core issues. First of all, it's clear to me now that brain science and research has advanced to the point where we're getting near the dawn of a new era where we will no longer need psychiatric drugs to correct brain chemistry associated with all kinds of mental illness. And a lot of this has to do with the new science of epigenetics that is giving us a roadmap for how to use targeted individualized nutrient therapy or biochemical therapy to fix these problems.
Well, it's exciting, and as you know, that's right up my alley because that's what I do as a clinician, and I have learned so much from your work. Let's talk about epigenetics. We've mentioned it on the show, and I think we can't mention it enough because it was groundbreaking work when it was discovered in about the mid-1980s. Let's expand on that subject of epigenetics.
Well, epigenetics, to me, is one of the most exciting things I've come across in my entire career, and it explains so many things. Before getting into what it actually is, I just want to mention that for one thing, it explains why Abram Hoffer's therapies back in the 50s involving niacin and folic acid were so successful in helping schizophrenics. It gives a lot of details as to and information and understanding of why methylation is so important to mental health and the role of oxidative stress in the brain. Epigenetics itself is a fairly new science. Yes, it was discovered back in the early 1980s, but back then no one seemed to understand the incredible value of this and the impact it was going to have on all kinds of health. It basically explains why identical twins have different outcomes as life goes on. And every one of us has about 1 trillion cells in our body. And in each one of these cells, we have a nucleus of these tiny little cells. We have our own DNA, which is composed of billions of individual molecules banded together. And we all have our unique DNA. But identical twins start off exactly the same in life. However, there are environmental insults or environmental changes or even traumatic events in life that can change gene expression. You see, every tissue in our body has different proteins being made, and they're being made by gene expression. And during the early days of in the mother's womb, the as the body is differentiating its different parts, like liver and brain and skin and eyeballs and all of that, decisions are made to cause some genes to express and others to be silenced. Without that, we would be just one big blob of identical cells, and we wouldn't be an organism with arms and legs and the rest of it. So, and this is what epigenetics is, basically, is the system by which the body, they call it bookmarking, that by which the body decides in each part of the body which proteins to express, which ones to silence, and also the rate of gene expression. And what happens is that we now know that some of the major conditions in the body are epigenetic in origin. For example, most types of cancer are now known to be epigenetic, that environmental insults, whatever they might be, can accumulate and cause cancer suppression genes to perhaps be stopped, or cancer genes to be turned on inadvertently. And now it's becoming quite clear that many types of mental illness are also epigenetic. And I've listed these, the ones that I'm sure of, in my book, and it's a fairly long list. And it includes autism, schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, and many other very, you know, typical and common forms of mental illness. So I guess that's a brief summary.
Well, you did it very well. And the twin studies, I always remarked that twins became more different as time went on, especially if they didn't live together. They lived in different environments. And now we know why. And that groundbreaking work that discovered epigenetics really turned the genetic world upside down. Thank you for your good explanation. Let's begin our discussion about mental illness and what you have found in your life's work on this. You've devoted a lot of time to this.
I started with behavior. I was a prison volunteer back as a young man working as a scientist at Argonne National Laboratory. And I founded a group of about 125 volunteers, and our goal was crime prevention. We thought that if we were going to make any kind of a change in people with respect to crime and violence in the USA, the best idea was to go straight to the people most likely to commit a crime, and we knew that was ex-convicts. So I organized an ex-offender program working directly with ex-convicts, trying to do whatever we could to assist them in, you might say, going straight and stopping their life of crime. And that's when my education began. I began to I got involved with a number of families that seemed to be really good families that had produced a criminal who had done terrible things. And I found other brothers and sisters in the same family that turned out just well. And that's how I got started. And we started doing experiments, studying, looking for biochemical differences in criminals and in their siblings. And we started out by identifying metal metabolism differences, and one thing just led to another, and I've spent the last 35 years studying the biochemistry of different types of mental illness.
Well, you have, and you've made a huge difference in it. Talk about, let's just list, when you say metal metabolism, let's just list some of the metals involved, and then we'll talk in detail in the next segments about those metals.
Well, I call them the repeat offenders, and there are some metals that have a lot to do with the way neurotransmission occurs, including the synthesis. And the key factors really are copper and zinc. Those are number one and number two. And then, of course, the toxic elements, the toxics like lead and cadmium and mercury that can cause havoc in the brain. So those are the primary metals that are involved. I guess another one would be lithium.
Well understood as a medication, but has an effect as a nutrient, correct?
Yes, we all have lithium in our bodies, and some of my earliest research showed that criminals have a very low innate level of lithium in their bodies compared to other people.
And that's an interesting finding. What is its major effect when it's low? What is the symptom that you're most likely to see?
Well, I think that lithium behaves a bit like potassium, and every cell in our body has a voltage, and our brain cells are like little tiny batteries with a voltage. And I think what the lithium does is it penetrates into the cell and increases cell voltage, and what it does is it tends to calm the brain. It causes the brain not to fire its brain cells as often. And I think this is especially useful in mania for people who have bipolar disorder. And I think that's why it works.
Well, that's the best explanation I have heard on lithium. And interesting, we're talking about batteries and lithium, but we're talking about the brain. And for those of you who have just tuned in, you're with the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM. We're brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the day. Please stay with us. We'll be right back after this break with more information on mental illness, nutrition, and what we can do about it. And we've been talking with Dr. William Walsh of the Walsh Research Institute.
Whether you're an active baby boomer, a weekend warrior, or a professional athlete, Boron's Arnicare Gel is the perfect solution to all life's little injuries. Arnicare, which contains the healing benefits of homeopathic Arnica Montana, can be used safely to treat muscle pain, stiffness, swelling, and bruising due to minor injuries, overexertion, and surgery. The non-greasy gel has no artificial colors, perfumes, or parabens. Arnicare is also available in cream and ointment formulas. You can find Arnicare at Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Visit Arnicare on the web at arnicare.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. They are the only raw multivitamin to include live enzymes and probiotics, amino acids, and antioxidants. They are gluten and dairy free with no soy allergens. Vitamin Code is uncooked, untreated, unadulterated, and binder free. Vitamin Code Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code. Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Get the one tiny pearl that delivers big acid offalus, 900% more. Get acid offalus pearls from Enzymatic Therapy. Each little pearl-shaped capsule makes a big impact, delivering up to 900% more live probiotics to the intestine than other products. This revolutionary product aids digestion, supports a healthy immune system, and is perfect for travelers who want to enhance intestinal health. This season, make sure to take the pearls that give you big acid offalus. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Staying mentally sharp means nourishing the mind as well as the body. That's why there's new Cognisure from Metagenics. Research shows that the active natural ingredient in Cognisure supports multiple mechanisms necessary for maintaining healthy cognition and a healthy brain as it ages. Cognisure is also easy to take in delicious, chewable chocolate tablets. Have a clear and bright future by maintaining mental capacity with healthy habits and Cognisure. Remember Cognisure for healthy brain aging support. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Are you under a lot of stress at work? Pressure from the boss, budget cuts, impossible workloads? It can all take a serious toll on your health, but we can help. Village Green Apothecary has everything you need for a healthier lifestyle, a wide range of nutritional supplements, health-related books, and more. We've been providing customized nutrition and healthy living resources for 45 years, and we'll take the time to advise you about your unique needs. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to the second segment of the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM. This show is brought to you by Village Green Apothecary, located at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, Maryland. I'm Dana Lake, and I alternate the show with Dr. Kevin Passaro, and we do try to bring you a wide variety of really good information all about you and your health. We are here every Sunday morning at 10 a.m., and you can tune in next Sunday for Kevin's discussion on nutrition. You can also catch these shows by going to myvillagegreen.com. The show is streamed through myvillagegreen.com, so you can listen to any shows you want and visit the site to hear previous shows and also get good information all about supplements and nutrition. Now, our guest today is William Walsh, PhD, and we've been talking about nutritional treatments and mental illness and getting to the source. And we will be covering a lot of fascinating topics. He has a new book that is not out yet, and hopefully he'll tell us a little bit more about the book, Nutrient Power. So, Dr. Walsh, let's continue our discussion about mental illness and what makes those who have mental illness different from the rest of the population. I know you have quite a database on this.
Yes, I do have I think I have the world's largest chemistry database for most types of mental illness. I have literally more than 3 million separate chemical analyses of blood and urine and tissues for different types of mental illness. And what we find is that if you compare the chemistry results for people with schizophrenia compared to the rest of the population, you find that they're strikingly different. The autistic population is probably the most strikingly different with respect to chemical levels than any group I've looked at. I have nearly a million chemical analyses alone just for people with depression. And what I find is very interesting, just to begin with, Carl Pfeiffer once had spent his lifetime studying schizophrenia, and he found that schizophrenia was an umbrella name that covered completely different conditions. And he separated schizophrenia into three major biotypes. Well, I've done the same thing for depression. And from my database, I find that depression is not a single entity at all, like DSM-4 says, but actually is a name given to at least five completely different conditions, each with their own brain chemistry abnormalities and completely different symptoms. There are conditions I've looked at, for example, on behavior. And the bottom line is that most of these people were born with chemical imbalances that affected and tended them, predisposed them to the very behaviors that they've been having. And there's been a lot of discussion about nature and versus nurture over the last many centuries. And now I think that discussion is finally ending, as we now know that really both are very important. And that the, for example, the recipe for a criminal is bad body chemistry and bad brain chemistry plus a bad environment. And we're now learning how these interplay, but my huge databases have been very helpful in sorting all of this out.
Well, I just love the way you express what you have to tell us. It's very clear. So the answer to the question of is it nature or nurture is yes. It's both.
It is both, yes.
And let's start with depression. You mentioned five types of depression. And I'm thinking about what's going on right now in medicine as they are reorganizing, redeveloping the psychology diagnosis, the DSM, and restructuring them. And they are taking into account more biochemistry. I'm not sure how far that's going to go. Are you aware of that change?
Well, I'm aware of it, and there's a huge debate going on within the community, and there's a war between people called the clumpers and the splitters. And the clumpers are the psychiatrists who want to define things as broad syndromes, and they're the ones that want to consider depression as a single entity with variations along a theme. Whereas the splitters, they're more the scientific biochemistry type people who want to study these as individual separate conditions and not all merge them all into a single entity. And I understand it's still pretty hot and heavy, and there's a lot of politics going on with that.
Oh, absolutely. In the autism community, it's an extremely hot topic right now. But I see a transition. What may come out of this may not be what we would all like to see, but it's a big transition because, as you know, up until now, it was all based on behavior. Diagnosis was how you presented yourself, not what your underlying chemistry revealed.
That's correct. And it is at least they're considering physiological as well as just behavioral.
Yes, very important. Well, let's talk about the five types of depression.
All right. The number one type of depression we find is what we call undermethylated depression, and this has everything to do with epigenetics. We found that we've studied the methyl status of every patient of the last 30,000 people that I studied, and the most common type of depression, and it amounts to about 40% of all people with clinical depression, is this thing called undermethylation. And people who have this have the undermethylation affects their epigenetic expression of something called transport proteins. And these transport proteins are what causes reuptake. And we now know that in mental health, that reuptake of neurotransmitters is the dominant factor. Well, the dominant factor of reuptake is the genetic expression of these transport proteins. And methylation tends to shut down or stop this production. So what you have is the fact that if you're undermethylated, you will be a low serotonin activity person. And these are the people who tend to do pretty well on SSRI antidepressants. But it's less than 40% of the whole population of people with depression. So that's probably the number one group. There's another group that's 20% of all depressives actually has high serotonin levels. And I call this low folate depression. They have very low folate levels. And what happens to them is that they have excessive production of these transport proteins. And what that means is that they have the opposite problem of the undermethylated people, and it just directly messes up their brain function. But the bad news is that most psychiatrists seeing these people will give them an SSRI, which will make them worse. And so this is the population that tends to do very badly on these kinds of medications. And really, I wish psychiatrists would just do a simple blood test, because they could find out who they should not give these antidepressants to and which ones are likely to benefit from them. The third group are what I call the high copper or copper overloaded depressives. And these are 96% of these are females. And this has a lot to do with estrogen, but these are people who are unable to manage and copper in their bodies. And copper is important because it's a very powerful factor in the synthesis of the neurotransmitter norepinephrine. Norepinephrine is created in the brain all day, every day, from dopamine, another important neurotransmitter. So if your copper level is abnormal, the ratio between these two really important neurotransmitters can be off by a factor of 3 or 4, which is extraordinary. So people with high copper depression, their number one symptom is anxiety. And this is very easily corrected simply by normalizing their metals, a process with biochemical therapy takes usually 2 to 3 months. The fourth type of depression I call pyral depression. And basically, this is depression caused by extraordinary oxidative stress. It can be caused by a genetic pyral disorder, which is a condition that results in extraordinary deficiency of B6 and zinc. B6, by the way, is probably the most powerful nutrient with respect to the synthesis of neurotransmitters. It's a key cofactor in the final step by which the brain makes serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. It's extraordinarily important. Anyway, pyral depressives have very low levels of B6 and zinc. Zinc is needed to regulate GABA, which is a calming neurotransmitter. The next one are toxics. About 5% of all the depressives in my huge database are depressed simply because they are overloaded in a toxic metal. Most of these are lead poisoned, or at least affected by lead, although cadmium, mercury, and other toxic metals also can be involved. So that's the five basic types that my database says exists.
Well, it's what you see in clinical experience. I like this breakdown. So 60% of the depressives are either undermethylated 40% undermethylated, 20% have the low folate, high serotonin, and that's very different from the first type, the undermethylated with low serotonin. And now we can understand much more the chemistry about what's called in medicine idiopathic reactions, which is a nice word for we're idiots about what the pathology is.
I'm giving the wrong medication to a person.
That's right. And that's what it boils down to. And as I always say, we may, you know, some people may not know what's going on, but we have learned a lot. And it's been in the literature. My first course was with Carl Pfeiffer years ago. And it is frustrating to know that this information's been available and it's just now coming into its own. So for those listeners who have just tuned in with us, you're with the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Stay with us. We will be right back after this break with Dr. William Walsh.
Megafood Premium Whole Food Supplements are the only supplements crafted from scratch with farm-fresh whole foods to deliver nourishment the way nature intended. Megafood believes Mother Nature knows best. They select only fresh whole food, harvested at the peak of ripeness, handle it gently and with care to deliver its vital essence to you in every bottle. Megafood, from farm to tablet. Our name is our promise. For more information, visit us online at megafood.com.
Zymogen is pleased to announce the arrival of FitFood, a delicious, high-quality, functional food that's formulated to support weight management, healthy body composition, glycemic management, cardiovascular and immune health, and more. Each delicious serving of FitFood contains 21 grams of pure New Zealand-sourced bioactive whey protein, 6 grams of fiber immune-supporting oat beta-glucan, and additional glutamine, glycine, taurine, and MCT. FitFood provides holistic support for today's active body. Learn more at Zymogen.com. Available now through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
All over the world, people are beginning to discover fish oil is one of the best secrets for unlocking great health. Thousands of studies have shown the amazing effects of these powerful omega-3s for heart health. Plus, fish oils have even been shown to balance moods and lessen anxiety. With exceptional taste, unrivaled freshness, and unsurpassed purity, Nordic Naturals is the easy way to get your omega-3s every day. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet. Committed to pure and great-tasting omega oils.
The brain requires nutrition just like the rest of the body. And this is where GeroFormula's NeuroOptimizer comes to the rescue. NeuroOptimizer is a concentrated source of nutrients needed for memory, mood, concentration, and focus. NeuroOptimizer supplies the building blocks for neurotransmitters, the chemicals that allow cells in the brain to communicate and to file away memories. NeuroOptimizer is the nutritional answer to the brain's needs. To learn more about formulas, visit Gero.com. Gero Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Do you have unique needs that a mass market pharmacy can't handle? Village Green Apothecary can help. Maybe your doctor prescribed a special compounded formula for you, or you have concerns about allergies or dietary supplements. We invite you to talk with one of our compounding specialists today. Our team of 50 includes pharmacists, nutritionists, a clinical herbalist, and a naturopath offering customized products and personalized healthy living plans to ensure your well-being. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to the third segment of the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary, located at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, Maryland. I'm Dana Lake, and I alternate the show with Dr. Kevin Pissarro. We both try to bring you a wide variety of good information all about you and your health. And we are here every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Tune in next Sunday to hear Kevin talk about nutrition. The show is streamed through myvillagegreen.com. That's myvillagegreen.com. It's a site where you can get lots of good information all about supplements and your health. Now, our guest today is Dr. William Walsh, and we're talking about nutritional treatments in mental illness and getting to the source. We've talked about epigenetics. We've talked about five different kinds of depression. When you look at the physiology, the biochemistry, there are differences in the word depression. There are a lot of sub-differences. We talked about that. And we're going to go on and talk more about the different mental illnesses and what's unique about the people who have those conditions. So let's keep up the conversation, Dr. Walsh. What do you have next for our listeners? This is great information.
Well, let's briefly talk about schizophrenia.
Good.
Schizophrenia, again, is an umbrella term that encompasses at least three completely different disorders, even though mainstream psychiatry often tends to treat them the same. The number one group is something like 40 to 45% of all people who get the diagnosis of schizophrenia, and they are often referred to as the paranoid schizophrenics. And these are people who are over-methylated, and this has a great epigenetic effect on their gene expression and on their on the reuptake of events that happen in the brain and at the synapses. And these people who are over-methylated, basically, their number one symptom is usually extraordinary anxiety, and they experience voices. They believe that they are hearing voices, and of course they're paranoid and have a number of other things. But this is a group that Abram Hoffer had great success with giving them niacin and giving them folic acid and B12. And it turns out that niacin has an epigenetic effect on a chemical, on an enzyme called sirtuin. And this has a dramatic effect of lowering dopamine levels, and that's why it worked. We've just learned this in the last couple of years. We now know why Abram Hoffer's therapies worked. Folic acid has a striking effect on epigenetics also that is kind of surprising. In terms of neurotransmitters, what folic acid does is it strips methyl away from DNA and from the proteins that DNA wraps around. And so now we understand quite clearly why Abram Hoffer's therapies were successful. So that's one of the types of schizophrenia. Another group are the exact opposite, the under-methylated schizophrenics. And these are the people who tend to shut down. They tend to become catatonic, and they usually have a diagnosis of delusional disorder or schizoaffective disorder. And they're all under-methylated. And they have, and again, epigenetics plays a role and messes up, you might say, to use a scientific term, their brain chemistry, especially the rate of reuptake of key neurotransmitters. The third type of schizophrenia I call pyral schizophrenia, and that's a name, really. It could have been oxidative stress schizophrenia, but these are people who their primary problem is extraordinary oxidative stress. And what this does to the brain is it causes the extraordinarily important NMDA receptor system that has everything to do with psychosis. It causes it to wind up with low levels of glutamate activity at this NMDA receptor, and that all by itself can produce schizophrenia. So those are the three major types of schizophrenia. We have developed, following the lead of the great Carl Pfeiffer, we have individualized nutrient therapies for each of these that has produced reports from the 3,600 people I've worked with. 85% of the families say that life is better. And we have quite a few cases, hundreds of cases, of people reporting complete recovery.
Well, you've got a unique database with the biochemistry, the physiology of these conditions. Is that an accessible database?
I've got as much of it computerized as I can, but there's a lot of it out there that isn't. It's a database that really needs to be completely computerized. But it's been gradually gleaned together over 35 years from more than 30,000 individual patients, and the results of it are really very clear. I mean, there are so many data points that just can't be a coincidence. It's quite definite. For example, we know that people with antisocial personality disorder, the career criminals, the people who become serial killers, we know what their chemistry imbalances are. They're a very unique combination of nasty chemical imbalances, and I'm quite certain that they're epigenetic in nature too, and that they were sort of sent along this path really in their mother's womb by epigenetics that went wrong and gene expression that went wrong.
With the serial killers, for instance, what is the uniqueness you see in the chemistry there? And can we address some of the environmental factors? And we now talk about the womb as environment. So it would be nice, we can't finish it all in this segment, but it might be nice to cover what those factors can be that can push people into a negative gene expression.
Well, the very first patients I ever brought to Carl Pfeiffer when we were doing work together was I brought him some ex-convicts straight out of Statesville Penitentiary who were sociopaths. And what he found has held up today. He found that they had a nasty combination of undermethylation that he called histidelia or high histamine, coupled with pyrrole disorder. They were all very zinc deficient. They had low blood spermine levels, and they were all hypoglycemic. And we find that that still holds up. I've interviewed and tested a large number of people, including people you've heard of like Charles Manson, Richard Speck, James Oliver Huberty, who did the we did a lot of forensic studies of people who had done horrible crimes. I worked with a case out with Scotland Yard, and we find that we get the same chemical signature for these people. And what we've learned in applying nutrient therapy to them is that if we get them young enough, if we get these very violent people headed for the penitentiary, if we can get them before they're into drugs and alcohol, the treatments seem to work really beautifully. However, once they get into drugs, alcohol, and maybe their self-image gets ingrained, our success rate is really not good for adults, adult criminals. And that's something that's always bothered me, because that was my original desire, was to help these people become more normal.
This is fascinating, and I'm sure some of this is quite new to some of our listeners. It's interesting about the drugs and alcohol, because wouldn't the kinds of individuals that you're evaluating, those that are criminals, some more violent criminals, serial killers, would they be more addictive toward specific kinds of drugs, alcohol versus cocaine, that sort of difference?
They're extraordinarily addictive. And by nature, and it's the undermethylation. People who are undermethylated have a tendency of being hooked on things really quickly. Another problem that they have is that these same people are fearless. These people are just absolutely fearless with respect. They don't respect danger, or nothing seems to frighten them. So it's a bad combination. They'll try anything. Most of the criminals I knew that were ex-convicts were just blithely taking cocaine, heroin, and whatever. And they seemed insulted if I ever suggested maybe that was bad for them.
Very interesting. Brain-driven. One more tidbit before this segment ends. Do you have anything else to add?
One of the most exciting things for me has been studying autism. And I've got, I think, the world's biggest database for autistic children. I've personally got involved with 6,500 cases, and I have a massive database of 800,000 chemical studies, chemical assays for them, and they're a very interesting population.
Well, let's talk about that in our next segment. It's Autism Month, as you know, so this is completely appropriate. And if you've just tuned in, listeners, you're with the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Stay with us. We will be right back after this break with more information from Dr. William Walsh.
The
The moment you feel achy or run down, nip flu-like symptoms in the bud with Boron's Acylococcinum. Clinical studies show that Acylo, when taken at first signs of flu, reduces the duration and severity of flu-like symptoms such as headache, body aches, chills, and fever. For 65 years, families throughout the world have relied on Acylo. It works safely and naturally without causing side effects like drowsiness or interacting with other medications. Keep Acylo on hand and feel like yourself again. Acylo is available at Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Visit Acylo on the web at Acylo.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. That's right, raw. Made with the highest quality standards to preserve raw nutrients, uncooked, untreated, unadulterated. They are binder-free with no fructose, maltodextrin, magnesium stearate, or cornstarch. With live enzymes and probiotics, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Wondering how to turn your bedroom into a hothouse? The answer is Hot Plants, the natural herbal way to make sex fun, vibrant, and satisfying. Two unique formulas, one for him and one for her, were developed by Chris Killham, the medicine hunter. Chris's book, Hot Plants, features these exciting products from enzymatic therapy. Hot Plants from the Science of Enzymatic Therapy, now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Some things are hard to stomach, and life doesn't stop for occasional immune challenges or intestinal distress. Probilarte from Metagenics offers a new targeted probiotic approach for intestinal support. Help maintain control while traveling or as a follow-up to antibiotic therapy to support intestinal flora for healthy intestinal function. Probilarte provides ID-certified probiotic strains suggested by research to enhance certain aspects of immune function, in addition to promoting a healthy balance of intestinal microflora. Probilarte is the go-to probiotic for patients on the go. Get it today. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Have you ever wondered why the cold and flu season occurs in the fall and winter months? One theory is because of a decrease in sun exposure, our bodies don't make enough vitamin D, which is essential to proper immune function. That's why medical experts recommend supplementing with vitamin D. Thorne Research's vitamin D products are made from pure vitamin D with no preservatives or unnecessary ingredients added. Support your immune system with Thorne's vitamin D1000 and D5000. These and other immune-supporting formulas are always available at Village Green.
Welcome back to today's final segment of the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, Maryland. And I'm Dana Lake. I alternate the show with Dr. Kevin Pissarro, and we are here every Sunday morning at 10 AM. You can tune in next Sunday to hear Kevin's interview about nutrition. Now, the show is streamed through myvillagegreen.com. Our guest today is Dr. William Walsh, PhD, and we've been talking about nutritional treatments in mental illness and getting to the source. We're talking about the underlying physiology, biochemistry in the body that predisposes people to all kinds, all varieties of mental illness. And we talked about nature, nurture, and they are both important. Environment alters, makes worse or better what nature is. So we're carrying on that conversation. We talked about the different types of depression. There's not just one type, and different types of schizophrenia. And now we're going to talk about autism. It is Autism Month. And as you may know, I'm an author of a book, The Kid-Friendly ADHD and Autism Cookbook, The Ultimate Guide to the Gluten-Free, Casein-Free Diet. And we have another book that will be coming out on the biochemistry, the what we call biomedical treatment of autism. And I learned a lot from Dr. Walsh and Dr. Pfeiffer regarding underlying chemistry. So, Dr. Walsh, let's talk about the autisms, as we sometimes say, the different types of autism and what's unique about them.
Well, what's really unique about autism is that they have the most extraordinary chemical abnormalities of any population I've ever studied. They have problems with, first of all, virtually all of them are undermethylated. This is something I discovered back in 1899. I remember when I first reported this to a think tank that Dr. Rimlin had assembled with his Van group, and it seemed like nobody there had any idea what undermethylation might have to do with autism. Well, now we know that undermethylation is a distinctive factor in autism, and there's been some great work by Jill James and Richard Deff and others that makes this absolutely clear. But that's only one factor. We also find that they have metal metabolism disorders. But probably number one is that their autism brains are different. Unless you can have very early intervention and impact an autistic child before, say, the age of six, you're going to wind up with a brain that has been organized somewhat differently. And the scientists have now nailed down some of the variations. But it seems to me that autism, more than anything else, I call it a Bermuda Triangle. It's an unfortunate combination of three factors. One is undermethylation. And what undermethylation does is in the womb, it causes deviant gene expression. The second factor is oxidative stress. It appears that what happens in autistics while these little fetuses are being developed is that this undermethylation tends to cause overexpression of certain genes and expression of certain proteins. And the net result is a tremendous sensitivity to oxidative stress, which makes them unusually sensitive to things like toxic metals or to immune problems. And the third factor is epigenetics itself. And those three factors come in, and I think that's what produces autism. My book, I've developed a model of autism that explains regressive autism and explains what happens to the brain. And basically, it's my best effort at showing what autism truly is and how it starts. And it's epigenetic in nature, and I think that's the first thing people have to realize is that with autism we have an epigenetic disorder. That's good news. It also explains why we could have an epidemic of what was believed to be a genetic disorder.
Yes, there are no genetic epidemics.
There are not, exactly. It takes centuries for the DNA to change with mutations. So what we have is something that's heritable. It runs in families, but it's not genetic. It's epigenetic. And the most serious insults, environmental insults, happen in the womb. And the problem is that most of these deviant expressions that produce autism happen in the first 20 to 25 days of gestation, even before most women know they're pregnant. So the environmental safeguards that women need to do really occur before they know they're pregnant. So this is an unfortunate thing, but it's something that people need to know. And then, of course, the first 3 years of life. There are numerous cases of autistics, and I myself have heard more than 1,000 families tell me of how right after a series of vaccinations or some exposure to a toxic metal, how their child, who was developing normally, suddenly regressed and lost speech and started, his head was completely, totally different. And the interesting thing about autism regressions is not so much the shocking changes in those little human beings, which is shocking enough because it's so pervasive, both physical and behavioral, but why does it persist? Why is it that once an autism regression occurs that it doesn't go away and can result in a lifetime of misery? So I've done a lot of research on this, as have many, many other very talented colleagues. And I think the mysteries of autism are starting to fade away, and we're getting very close to fixing this. There are so many physical problems, GI tract problems, yeast overgrowth, and on the food sensitivities. But I think a lot of the GI tract problems have to do with oxidative stress. They have such severe oxidative stress in their GI tract that the enzymes that break down foods can't survive, and so they cannot completely break down proteins, especially proteins from milk or from wheat, casein and gluten. And so if one can just correct the oxidative stress in the GI tract, that situation would modify. So there's a large number of therapies out there for autism, and it's hard for a family to decide what to do because they can't possibly do everything. I think the first thing that an autism family needs to do is decide whether they want to follow the dictates of mainstream medicine, and I think that that turns out to be a mistake because there are so many new promising therapies that have produced so many reports of recovery that I really think that it would be in the best interest of those children to have biochemical therapy very early.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. I actually do lecture. Jill James is a colleague I lecture with. It's an honor. Dr. Deeth as well, and many other of the scientists in the field. Of interest, when you talk about the womb, for decades I have done what I call pre-prenatal nutrition. I've turned it into pre-preconception nutrition. The earlier we start, the better, 6 months to a year ahead. There's a new study that revealed a difference between mothers who had typically developing children, mothers who had developmentally delayed children, and mothers who had children with autism. And the difference was that the greater the intake of supplements, especially 3 months prior to conception through the first month of pregnancy, the lower the autism rate.
That makes perfect sense to me.
It does. And then when they studied the mothers and their gene variants and the children, they found that it reduced autism, but it was still expressed. In other words, you can alter where that child is headed. And to me, this is just wonderful. I have a prenatal lecture that I teach on the biochemistry. And so to hear what you have to say is very exciting. Before we end the show, we're almost at the end. Could you talk a little bit about what kinds of things in the environment are disturbing in the womb and once a child's born?
Well, we certainly know that foreign molecules are the real primary problem. For example, we know what happened with thalidomide. We know back in the 60s that thalidomide not only caused deformed children, but it also caused a very high incidence of autism. So there's an example right there of a medication that unfortunately had a side effect of producing autism. And I think there are just so many chemicals that are supposedly medications that are dangerous. And then, of course, you get chemicals from the environment. There's pesticides. There's toxic metals. These are things that can really be an issue. But another one that people don't consider too much is that under methylation can produce autism by itself. So if you have an undermethylated mother and an undermethylated father, and the fetus itself is undermethylated, that all by itself can probably produce autism in some children. They become unusually vulnerable to all kinds of environmental insults. And, of course, mercury is something that a lot of people talk about, and certainly mercury could trigger an autism, and I think it has in many cases. The good news about mercury is we now have pretty solid evidence that the mercury leaves the body relatively quickly, although this is somewhat controversial. Myself and some people at Harvard have actually taken brain sections and looked to see if mercury was still there 5 or 6 years after people had received received thimerosal and their vaccinations, and we can't find it, essentially. It's at very, very low levels. So at least it can't do any continuing harm, but it certainly may have caused harm in the beginning.
Well, that's significant, and we will have you back on the show, especially once your book is out. I want to tell people where they can get the book at your site, walshinstitute.org. That's walshinstitute.org, and the book is Nutrient Power. Thank you, Dr. Walsh, for your contribution.
Well, thank you, Dana.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us on the Essentials of Healthy Living here on 1500 AM. You can access this show or any of the previous shows through myvillagegreen.com. Please remember, it's not the number of breaths you take. It's the moments that take your breath away. This is Dana Lake and Village Green wishing each and every one of you good health and a breathtaking day.
Ah, the joy of commuting in Washington. Whether you work on the Hill or outside of the Beltway, you know how stressful it is to get around. Stress can take a serious toll on your health, and Village Green Apothecary can help. We offer over 10,000 healthy living products, including top-quality nutritional supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Our nutritionists and pharmacists are here to advise you about creating your very own individualized healthy living plan. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda, 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files in all these different formats, then 20 years later, somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTO.
NBC News Radio, I'm Thomas Roberts. There are firefights being waged across Kabul and at least three other locations in Afghanistan today. The Taliban launched a series of coordinated attacks on at least seven sites across the Afghan